Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Universal Furniture, whose big bedroom event kicks off this week. That means starting Friday, you can save 15% on all of their bedroom furniture, and right now you can go enter to win $5,000 worth of it at universalfurniture.com/YHL. Again, that's universalfurniture.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Let's talk about open concept bathrooms. How blurry should that line be between where you do your sleeping and where you do your business? Plus an old DIY disaster story we've never told and a fun way to help a friend who's moving. My what's new this week is a new social idea. Ready?
Oh no, that's how you're gonna present this? I didn't realize that.
So you guys, background. Before we record podcasts, we make little bulleted lists, but we don't really explain what we're going to say because we don't want it to be too obvious and scripted, and we like to just react to each other.
So, I don't like to be like, Sherry, your next line.
Right. So I was like, I see the bullet, but I'm going to put a little flair on it.
Yeah. Okay, go.
So my pitch is that this should become a thing. Our friends invited us over for a night of hanging out and eating and just bringing our kids together. Our kids are friends.
That is a thing already.
That is a thing already, but they're moving and they wanted our help with some house stuff. So it was like dinner, but instead of dinner and a movie or dinner and drinks, it was like dinner and DIY.
It's like dinner and some spackle.
Yeah, I feel like it should be a thing because it was so fun. And I think it should only be a thing for people who think it's fun. But like if you're handy and you have some friends who are moving or whatever, I think it's so much more fun to do like dinner versus like an afternoon of hard labor. Like there just was something fun about it being an evening. Our kids were playing. We were moving furniture, pausing to have chicken nuggets, moving more furniture, having a baked potato. Like it was really fun to get our hands dirty.
Separate our starch consumption, you know, just by various DIY activities.
Exactly.
Well, I do think you make an interesting point now that I let it settle my brain a bit. That a lot of times when we have friends moving, the way we think of contributing is like coming over to help them pack on moving day or like move things into the moving van. But there are some contributions you can make earlier in the process to sort of take some of the weight off of their shoulders because moving is stressful. Everyone knows that. And so maybe you could like offer some assistance earlier on in a fun environment like eating chicken nuggets and baked potatoes.
Basically, the reason we were invited to do this was because my friend who's moving knows I stage houses. So originally it was pitched as like, hey, do you want to come help me stage my house? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be fun. And she's like, well, what if I do dinner and you bring John and the kids? And it became this whole thing. And it was actually great to have John around because like heavier things I wanted to move, I wasn't alone hoofing it through the house.
Yeah, like you and your friend went off and, you know, got some stuff taken off some of the walls. Like I went off with our husband and we like were working on some tile and grout stuff. So like we got to divide and conquer as well by us both being there.
Yeah. And one of the biggest tips, if you're listening and you're like, I'm selling, what did you do? I just took in rooms as a whole. Like I stood outside the kitchen and I decided what should come off the walls and off the floors. Because two things you do when you're staging, unlike decorating where you layer and add texture and color and interesting shapes, when you're staging, you remove things. You look at the walls and think if the walls would be cleaner than that big heavy art or that big dark portrait, you just remove it and leave the wall blank. And nobody comes in a house and says, I'm not going to buy it because there's too many blank walls. Like it just looks open and airy and nobody registers it. It's more like they appreciate the house and the bones of the house instead of seeing all the stuff on the walls and on the floor cluttering it up.
Yeah, I remember when we sold our second house, one kind of sticking point for the eventual buyers was we still had all the frames up in that hallway where it was like wallpapered with picture frames. And we told them like, no, we're going to take these down. We're going to patch all the walls. You won't have to worry about it. But I still remember they had a reaction like, that is a lot of stuff going on in that hallway. And I was like, I should have done that before they came to see the house.
Exactly. Another one of my favorite things to do is like look at rugs. And if there's not a rug in a room that might need it, like there's a big floating coffee table, but there's nothing under it to ground it, but there might be a rug in the dining room. I love to steal a rug out of a dining room. You hardly ever need a rug in your dining room to sell your house because it's usually hardwood floors. People think that's beautiful. Pull the rug and put it somewhere that needs it, like maybe under the sofa and the ottoman to ground that seating area.
I think they're always especially helpful in rooms, whether you're decorating or you're staging, to help communicate what the function of a room is. So if you have a weird shaped living room, like putting the rug down will help say like, this is the living space, which is especially helpful when you're gonna have people coming through and trying to imagine themselves living in this house.
Right, it really helps to define a zone.
And the other thing you guys did that I hadn't seen you do before in these other staging things was, didn't you guys go up in her attic and like move stuff around to make more space up there also?
Yes, like one of the tips I have is you want people to tour the house and see the space and the architecture, not the things. And that counts for closets and storage, garage, attic. It counts in there. If somebody sees your garage crammed of stuff and your attic crammed of stuff, what it communicates is this house doesn't have enough room to store all my stuff.
Yeah, you might think it communicates, look at all the things it can hold, but no, it just looks like busy and overwhelmed. So it doesn't inspire confidence in the future owner that they're going to have enough room. They're going to start picturing themselves overfilling the space and being cramped. So you want space and, you know, room to grow for that person.
Exactly. So in the attic, all we did was push all the bins and baskets to the far wall. So when you come up the stairs, it feels open. There's hardly anything there in that half of the attic. And at the end of the attic, you see some bins, but they're not right there in your face when you come up the stairs. And it feels like there's a lot more room to put things up there.
That's a good tip for also like closets, like you said, because if you don't have large closets, or even if you do have large closets, like see if you can pare down your wardrobe, because it's going to make the closet seem even bigger than it is. I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah, anywhere you can store things too. This sounds really silly, but if you get a giant Tupperware bin or two and you put extra things and you put them in the trunk of your car, just for the 2 hours that you're doing a showing, if you put them in the car and drive off, that's like two more bins worth of junk they're not seeing in your closets or on the floor or in the laundry room.
A pantry.
So. Just throw all your spices in a bin and just put it in the car.
Yeah, just have like a mobile kitchen in the trunk of your car. All the cool kids are doing it.
Does anyone need garlic powder?
Well, actually, speaking of what all the cool kids are doing, you guys may remember way back in episode 75, I talked about an app called Moment that was helping me cut down on my screen time on my phone, because I really have been on this personal mission to untether myself and not look down at my screen and be more present in the world. And a lot of that for me has been to detox from social media, because I had been kind of a Facebook addict. As of this recording, I have not had Facebook on my phone for 3 months. I've not had Instagram on my phone for 1 month. And I had not had Twitter on my phone for a day, but I just reinstalled it this morning.
He loves him some Twitter now.
Well, I manage our Twitter account, so for work purposes, I had to get it back on my phone. Sherry, fortunately, does most of our Instagramming and Facebooking, so I have the quote-unquote luxury of deleting those apps and our Young House Love account still being active. So I know not everyone can delete these if you use them for purposes like that. But I thought I would sort of check in with everyone, because I feel like I'm at the point where I'm ready to reinstall some of these apps and sort of come back at my phone with a more healthy approach to using it. I wanted to share some of the pros and cons of having been off these apps for so long, and also some of the things I think worked best for me if anyone else is trying to detox a little bit. So let's start with the pros. Obviously, the big pro of having been off of these social media platforms for so long is that I have spent a lot less time on my phone. I think I've talked before on the podcast about how I've cut down what was an average of 3 hours a day to like an hour and a half. The other day, I spent 7 minutes on my phone. Seven.
What were those 7 minutes? What's the most important?
I think I was doing email in the morning, and then I like took a photo and I did a couple texts.
Oh.
And that was it.
Pretty chill.
Yeah. I mean, the day before that, I was on my phone 3 hours because I was sick and I was on the couch a lot. So it goes back and forth. But generally, I felt less addicted to my phone, and like that reflex to just pick it up when there's a lull in your day, you know, whether it's during a commercial break while you're watching TV or while you're waiting for something to load on your computer, like all those moments where there isn't something active happening in front of you, when you just kind of like turn and pick up your phone and see what's going on. That I think I've eliminated a lot for myself, which I feel really good about. I wish I could say the other pro was that I was like suddenly hyper-focused and hyper-productive. And I don't know if I necessarily experienced that. I do feel like I was more productive and more focused because I was doing a lot less task switching than I used to.
You didn't have like epiphany after epiphany.
No, I don't think I got brilliant like that app.
They said you were going to be bored and brilliant.
Yes, but I just feel like I'm keeping my head up more. Like I just am able to be doing a single task, even if that task gets boring, and not have the pull to my phone anymore. Those are all my pros. Let me talk about the cons, because there were definitely some cons.
You missed all my funny memes on Instagram.
I did miss a lot of stuff. Actually, that is my big con, is that I felt like I was a little bit isolated. Like, I would love to say that taking myself out of online social media had made me more like real life social, and I was hanging out with friends and like having all these parties and good times face to face.
DIY and dining.
Well, there was that, I guess. But I think just because of the nature of life and, you know, working and being parents, like you don't get as much FaceTime with your friends as you would like. And so by not having the internet relationships that I was relying on so heavily, It's more like there was just an absence of socialization. Like I cut myself off from my friends that don't live here or my other blogger friends. Like I really felt out of the loop. So that's one reason why I do want to dip back in and reload Facebook and Instagram on my phone so that I can sort of reconnect with people that way. Although I'm just going to try to do it in a more moderate way and, you know, less getting lost in the feed for 45 minutes. I did have an interesting observation about sort of the state of blogging and stuff from this, because not having Instagram or Facebook, I was basically keeping up with people's blogs just on their blogs. And I realized how little people are updating their blogs these days.
It's all on Instagram right now.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm one to talk, you know.
Right.
I mean,
we do a post a week.
Right. But I realized without having the Insta stories and all that, it felt like not much was going on with people. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of house progress going on or new news or projects. Like, I think so many people are putting so much of their updates into other media now that, like, just looking through the lens of the blog felt very slow.
Yeah.
And I'm not really passing judgment, I guess, on that. I'm sure people listening, you know, will feel one way about it. I think that's just the nature of how things have shifted.
Yeah. I think people put long form on the blog or a podcast, and they put all the little short updates on Instagram and Facebook. I was noting the other day, we did an update of how I filled in a hole in the wall from an old intercom we took out. And I was thinking this would be the most boring blog post, you know?
Yeah.
So Insta Stories is a great place to put it because I shared it. People could get it. I can archive it there now. But it's such less of a commitment of like, it's a big post and then I have to promote it on social media and it will live on the blog forever. Like it's a way to shift focus from big projects to little projects and give them like their Instagram due instead of dedicating a whole blog post to
it. Well, it also reinforced to me how even we use our blog. I think a lot of people's like, you know, Instagram is what's happening now and a blogging is a summary of it later. And it used to be that all we got was people's later summaries.
Right.
You know, you got to learn about something after they were done with it. They had time to take all the photos and write it up. But now we're so used to seeing what's going on in the middle of things and the ups and downs of the projects as it's happening. And I wasn't getting any of that.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more, I think, behind the scenes. There's polls. Like, do you like this fabric or this fabric? Like, Instagram and Facebook are a great way to engage with your audience, I think. I'm not sad that they're stealing focus from blogs. I think they're awesome in their own right. But I do agree with you that if we just look at blogs and you cut yourself off from social media, you're missing a lot of the story these days because a lot of the story lives there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really interesting. So I'm glad to get back in. I did say I wanted to share some of the things that worked for me because the Moment app, which again, I really recommend it. If you pay for it, there's a boot camp that is like a 14-day boot camp that gives you a bunch of different tactics to try. And so some of the ones that worked best for me, one, obviously, I've talked about is deleting apps. When I learned that I was supposed to delete my most used app, which was Facebook, it felt like it was impossible. Like, how am I going to live without my Facebook app? But here I am 3 months later.
Still alive.
Still breathing. Heart still beating, best I can tell.
Did have a bad stomach bug, but got through it.
Yeah. But
probably independent.
That was not Facebook's fault. So I think if you are addicted to a certain app, I would try taking it off your phone. You can always reinstall it. The other big thing was also just keeping my phone out of reach. You know, we're so used to having our phones in our pockets or on our desks, like right next to us at all times. And I found just simply like charging it on the other side of the room or another room was a physical barrier between me and my phone that really cut down on that instinct to just go pick it up.
Yeah. One thing I was doing accidentally, but I realized it made a real difference, was I was going into stores and leaving my phone in the car. And then instead of in line, just like scrolling mindlessly, I was just like thinking about things I needed. Oftentimes I'd remember one thing I forgot and run and go get it. Like I felt more focused in the store without my phone. Of course, it's not helpful if someone's trying to get a hold of me or I need to look up a coupon. So there were pros and cons even to that. But I do agree with you. Not having it on you eliminates that urge to like stare at it and tap it.
Yeah. So I would say if you're, again, trying to cut down on your own phone, just like try leaving it somewhere else for a little while. You can always go get it if it's really important, or you can do the things from your computer. That's the other thing I was doing, was just doing a lot more things from my desktop, which also helped me maintain my time of like when I'm working at my desk in the office, that's the time I can do these things. But when I'm on the couch, I'm not going to be in like my computer mode. The last thing that was really helpful in cutting down on my usage was not using it in the bedroom. I know a lot of people say, like, just don't bring it to bed at all, like, leave it downstairs. I still use it as my alarm, so I can't really get past that. So what I would do is as soon as I walked up into the bedroom each night is I would put on an airplane mode, which made it pretty boring to use. So that really deterred me from spending those last, like, 20 minutes sitting up in bed just checking Twitter or checking to see if I had a new email. Like, when you think about it, you don't need to check your email the moment you go to bed. It can wait till the morning, just like it did 10 years ago when none of us had smartphones. We all survived, right?
And then it can free you up to hear me gasp while I read all of my young adult books.
Right, exactly.
Aston's back.
I was present for that, Sherry. I was in that moment. So I will put a link in the show notes if you guys want to try this app out. Again, it's called Moment. I'm not saying you have to get that app in order to do this, because you can certainly just do it on your own. But that was helpful for me to have a guide along the way. So that was a little bit heavier than I meant it to be. But I feel like we should lighten it up then with the return of one of our favorite segments. This one is called, well, that's embarrassing.
I always love these segments. It's usually me being very embarrassed. This one's kind of a dual, like, we're both guilty, but I'm more guilty.
Yeah, we'll let the jury decide on that one.
This is a real oldie. We're taking it back.
Yeah, this is 2015-ish, I think. Yeah.
It's a long time ago. We were renovating our half bathroom. It was when we weren't blogging. We were getting ready for our second book to come out. And in renovating that room, we were like, hey, if it's finished in time, we can squeeze it into the book.
Yeah, I mean, we were, I don't want to say banking on it, but we were starting to bank on it.
We would be disappointed if it hadn't made it into the book, just because it's annoying when you have something coming out and something is finished a month too late that it can't be in that thing.
Yeah. So you've seen pictures of this half bathroom, or the powder room, we call it sometimes, on our first floor. We'll put a photo in the show notes at younghouselove.com. If you haven't seen it, it's also in the book if you want to see it. A lovable, livable home. You can pick it up on Amazon.
And the subject of this story is a certain leggy sink. It's like a porcelain sink that you'd describe almost as a pedestal sink, but instead it's called a console sink because it has two beautiful, gorgeous porcelain legs that it rests on.
Yeah, you know how on a pedestal, the support is a single support, like on the back of the sink against the wall. The supports are two legs at the front corners. And so this particular one that we bought, which was kind of a big part of the overall makeover, because we had had this kind of hulking vanity in there that was taking up a lot of room and visual room of this small powder room. And so we wanted this console sink to kind of lighten things up and create more visual space. And so getting this sink right was a big part of making over this powder room.
Right. And I had read the reviews. We got it from this website called plumbersurplus.com.
Nope. Signature Hardware. Try again.
You're right. Signaturehardware.com. And the only reviews that it had that were bad were tons of people saying, it is so hard to install. The legs break so easily. And I was like, you know what? We're DIYers. We can freaking do this. We're going to order the sink. We're going to show the sink who's boss.
And I'm not sure we did.
I'm not sure we did either. So we went to install the sink. And I was like, John, indulge me as I lecture you about how breakable these legs are. I read all the reviews, and everybody says you break the legs when you install it. We can do this. We've built a deck, John. The least we can do is install the sink.
Sherry was like hitting 2 points really hard. We can do this, and don't you dare break those legs.
Don't you break those legs or I'll break your legs, was basically the conversation.
Well, because again, we had read it was going to be hard to install. The sink was $350, so it wasn't cheap. It wasn't like crazy expensive, but I certainly did not want to break a $350 thing. And also, we kind of had this timeline in the back of our heads, like it'd be great to finish this in time to put it in the book if we can. So like Sherry had read, installation was a little tough because the instructions were not super clear. The gist of it is that the thing basically just attaches to the wall. The legs really don't do a whole lot. They're mostly decorative. I mean, it does rest on it, but it rests on it mostly to keep the legs from tipping over.
And that was a lot of the reviews were saying, if you install it slightly too high, the legs will just drop out because they're not being held in place. Like, yeah, you need to install it low enough to rest on the legs so it holds them in place, but not so low that you can't get the legs under it because then they won't fit.
Yeah, and that was my big beef with the instructions, is that it did not tell you the height at which to install the metal plate on the wall that it all hung on. So you had to figure out yourself, by holding up this heavy sink, where on the wall this metal plate should go in. And then the metal plate has to go right into a stud, and we didn't have a stud, so we had to cut open the drywall and put like a...
Oh, I forgot about that. We added a wood brace piece.
Yeah, we had to put blocking in between the studs and then re-drywall it. Like, it was a big thing to just get to the point of putting this sink up, the whole time me sweating the fact that I know I'm going to break this thing and Sherry is going to have my head.
I'm breaking your face.
Yeah, you're going to break something of mine. And so we get to the point where we can hang it on the wall. We're dry fitting everything, because once you have the top on, you kind of just hinge it up slightly to slide the legs in. And you're supposed to put like a ring of caulk around the top of the legs so that they hold in place under the sink. So we dry fit everything, and, you know, miracle of miracles, we got the height perfect. And we just had to take the legs out, put the caulk on them, and put them back in. I could not have been more paranoid through this entire thing. So I am doing the most careful baby ginger touching of this ceramic leg that I can. And I lift up the sink, grab the leg, hand it back to Sherry. She takes it. I turn to go get the second leg. And then what do I hear behind me?
Smash!
The sound of the leg shattering all over the foyer.
This is what had a tile floor, so it was an especially dramatic sound.
Yes. I don't know what my first thought was, but I know a pretty quick thought was, I'm glad that wasn't me.
And I was like, I am still holding the leg. How did it break? And what happened is the top part of the leg detaches from the bottom part of the leg, but none of us knew that. So it was like a slip-on cup part at the top of the leg. And I'm gripping the cup as it's shattering. And my brain is like, I'm holding it with two hands. How is it breaking? But the bottom part of the leg slipped out of the cup and just like smashed on the floor.
Yeah, there was just like, I think, a plastic sleeve that neither of us saw that was on the top. And you were firmly holding that plastic sleeve. Unfortunately, the plastic sleeve was not firmly holding the ceramic leg.
Oh my gosh. And I just was like, it took me a minute to regain my composure because I was like, oh my gosh, we broke the leg.
As people who have documented disasters with photos over the years several times, neither of us could bring ourselves to take a picture of this. So there is no documentation of this ever happening because we just kind of, I think, quietly retreated to our own corners to come to terms with what had transpired.
I had to really do some soul searching that I was the one who broke the leg. I was convinced it was going to be John. And then I called them up, and in my kindest sad voice, I said, I'm calling because you broke one of the legs of the sink. And they were so sweet. They actually said, you know what? That happens all the time. I'm actually a plumber who wrote the instructions for how to install that. And I kept telling them we should include three legs because you almost always break one in installation. So free of charge, they like shipped us 2-day airmail, a new leg.
They shipped us two new legs, remember?
Oh, is that what they did? They gave us two. They were trying to put the odds in our favor that we weren't going to break all the legs.
We still have the spare upstairs in case we break it again.
Yeah, we saved the leftover leg because, you know, at some point something's going to break. But it was so kind of them that they sent us another one or two, and that enabled us, since they shipped it so quickly, to make the book deadline and photograph the bathroom. And it just narrowly made it into the second book. And we thought we'd never tell that story, but there has been enough time where we can now laugh at it.
Right. We have a long history of breaking things like that. I feel like I can have a series of posts in the show notes this week.
Of like things we've broken?
Oh yeah, there was the dog. There was another light fixture in the hall bathroom. There was the ram during the second or the first book.
Oh, the ram that jumped off the wall.
Yeah. So
that wasn't our fault.
No, things are not safe around us though, especially Sherry. Actually, speaking of bathrooms, we have a listener question that I wanted to read because I think there is an interesting debate in here. This is from Lydia, and she says, I have a question I would love to hear explored in a future podcast. What is it with master bedrooms with wide open ensuite bathrooms? You know, the ones with no door except a tiny toilet room? I thought it was some weird 90s design trend until I saw them in some brand new builds here in Northern California. I have also seen a similar trend in hotel bathrooms where bathrooms are enclosed in glass and have virtually no privacy. Maybe it's more of a West Coast thing. This East Coast girl doesn't get it. I'd love to know the reasoning behind it. Again, that's from Lydia. And I can't really speak to the East Coast versus West Coast thing. That is not my area of expertise.
I can speak to it. New York forever.
Well, but
what do you mean you can't speak to it? We're East Coast. Represent, John Peterson.
I can't make the comparison. It's not like case closed, New York forever. Thanks for your question, Lydia. On to the next one. What I think I can speak to is that I see exactly what she's saying. And I think it actually has been a trend that's been around for a while beyond just the West Coast.
Yeah, it's in the East Coast too.
It may be more recent than the 90s, but I think she's actually right in saying that it probably is driven a lot by hotels and sort of a lot of luxury hotels specifically. I can't back that up with a lot of facts except for our own experience, because when we were on our first book tour back in 2012, we were put up at several hotels that had very interesting, very not private bathroom situations.
That's right. There was a lot of turnaround. I'm using the bathroom.
Yes, there was a lot of glass where there should not have been glass.
Because we're like, okay, open showers, that's interesting. Like we stayed at one in, was it Toronto? And it had a glass shower wall that the shower wall was shared with the bedroom. So you could see right through the glass. Comically, there were blinds that you could close or open.
Yeah, I guess if you wanted some privacy, you could just shutter the blinds inside. But it was still very surprising to walk in and see basically the bedroom has a window directly into the shower.
Right, like you could look into the shower just like you could look outside.
Yes. I will put a picture in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you can see what we're talking about. I forget the name of the hotel. But that was only upped by the hotel we went to in Miami.
Yeah, I was going to say that I didn't mind the Toronto one. I thought it was funny, sort of a novelty to be like, look, I'm in the shower. You can see me or I can close the blinds. Hoo, hoo, hoo. But in Dream, this Miami hotel, you could see the toilet.
Yeah, this hotel in Miami was super tiny. It's called the Dream Hotel. And when you walked in this very tiny room, you were in like an itty bitty vestibule, just like any normal hotel room where you walk through the door into your room. And on either side of you were two glass doored rooms. One was the shower, like immediately the shower right there in the foyer. And the other one was the toilet. Like,
just right there, kind of in the foyer, sharing a glass wall with the bedroom. You could relax on the bed and just stare right into the potty.
Yes, it was such a tiny room. There was no hiding from this glass door. So as Sherry said, there was a lot of like, turn around, honey.
I totally see the distinction. I don't know if all listeners do, because I know there are some couples who go to the bathroom in front of each other. And I know there are lots of couples who shower together. To me, there's a difference between those two activities. Yes. I remember when I started dating John and someone said like, oh, I don't go to the bathroom in front of my boyfriend because there's got to be some mystery in the world. And I've adopted that. And we never have. We've, through childbirth and all the other things, we keep a little bit of mystery.
Let's close this part of the discussion. I think the point is there's a line for us. Everyone makes their own line. Our line is the toilet.
Put the toilet in a room. And the funny thing is, I feel like Lydia's question was, now it seems like a lot of the bathrooms are open, but there's a tiny toilet room.
Yes. I think a water closet, as they're commonly called, like just a room for the toilet itself, is a very common thing, especially in new homes with these really large master bathrooms. Like, I think that is a perfect device to keep some mystery in the relationship. I actually did a little bit of Googling before we started recording because I was trying to figure out like, okay, is this the new thing? Like, where did it come from? I couldn't find an origin to this trend, but I did see people as early as 2010 complaining about it. So I don't think Lydia is alone in kind of cringing at the idea of bathrooms becoming more open to the bedrooms. I actually saw a label for this trend. They call it the open concept bathroom.
Okay.
You're not wowed by that?
It just doesn't seem like a thing that needs an open concept.
Well, but it makes sense as a label for it because open concept is really big in homes. You know, open concept living, which generally I feel like talks about like a kitchen and a living room being open to one another. Like we all like that. We shouldn't say we all like, but that's a popular idea.
Right.
And I think the reason why that's popular is probably some of the same reasons that an open concept bathroom is gaining popularity as well. Because when you have fewer walls, fewer doors, like it feels bigger. It feels more spacious. There's more flow both visually and you could argue functionally. You know, we actually in our bathroom here at this current house, which is not open concept.
It's got about 30 walls blocking you from any angle.
Yes, it's about as closed concept as you could get in a bathroom.
There's one sink separated by a wall from another sink.
Yes, you have privacy between your sinks. But we actually took a couple of the doors out of that bathroom because there were four doors in this one little area because there was a closet door, a bathroom door, a linen closet door, and then the shower water closet door. So there is no longer a door between our bedroom and the first vanity, like the
warm-up vanity before you get to the main vanity.
Well, you could say that our bathroom does not have a door to it because from our bed, you can see our sink.
Right. But then you open a door to get to the potty, the other sink, and the shower.
Right, exactly. We took off the closet door and the bathroom door just to help it flow better. And so I am excited about the day that we knock down more walls so there is more flow in there and you get more light. So I'm saying this all to say I get why open concept is a natural trend for something like a bathroom and a bedroom to go to.
Right. Well, I was going to say that while at a hotel, it might be like a novelty, and perhaps you could argue that hotels like this dream hotel were not for like a mother-in-law and a mother to stay at. They're probably like bachelorette parties, which everyone's crazy, or husband and wife romantic encounter, which is like nice and steamy. Ooh, the shower is glass. But the toilet...
we're going to have to put that issue aside because we can't come to terms with it.
We can't figure it out. But the other funny thing is we did stay at a third hotel similarly that had things open, but this one had like a compromise. It had a little sign that said, yes, the shower is open, but please contact the front desk if you'd like a shower curtain.
I think that was like a W hotel in Austin. Maybe a lot of W's are like that. I just thought, what an awkward conversation to have to call the front desk and request a shower curtain.
And then it doesn't just like snap up. Someone has to stand there and attach like every single ring while you painfully make small talk with them.
So I think, like you were saying, though, the reason why hotels do it is a lot because a hotel is supposed to be like a special experience. Like it is supposed to have some novelty, something that you remember about it. I mean, that was 5-6 years ago that we stayed in those hotels and we are still talking about them today. So clearly they made an impression on us. And I can see for people who want to create a special or unique experience in their master bedroom, why you might steal some ideas from that. Because I don't want my master bathroom, like my dream bathroom that's for me, to be the same as my kids' hall bathroom. You know, like it's nice that it's
a little... Is it for you or is it for us?
For us, excuse me.
You want your own bathroom separated by a wall from my bathroom.
I'm saying when I picture what a master bathroom looks like it should have something that's special or different about it than every other bathroom in the house.
As long as your bedroom has a door, I'm kind of like, your bedroom is your private space.
Yeah.
If you need something to lock because you're going to shower and you're afraid someone's going to walk in on you, what's the difference between locking the door of the bedroom versus locking the door of the bathroom?
Yeah.
I just don't want to be on the toilet and like a neighbor comes walking into my bedroom thinking it's just the bedroom and they can see the toilet.
We've had so many wonderful visuals for you guys this episode. They'll all be in the show notes. Anyways, I think there are some other practical things beyond just people walking in on you or, you know, surprising you if you don't have a door. I mean, if you don't have any separation between your shower and your main bedroom, like what about like moisture and stuff? Like if you want a steamy hot shower, but it's all open, like it's going to be impossible to get a nice warm bathroom, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is people have asked about the beach house master bathroom because that has sort of like a glass wall, but it's an open-ended shower. It doesn't splash out water-wise, but it doesn't hold heat within the shower.
Right.
And people have said, is that a really cold shower? And I said, no, you just close the door to the bathroom, which is, you know, not a huge bathroom.
Yeah, it's not a huge room.
But I would say if that was attached to the bedroom with no door, I could never assume that it would get steamy and warm in there, that I wouldn't be cold. I think any shower that was open to a large bedroom would probably be colder to walk out of than one in an enclosed space that could like hold the steam better.
That's why you need like a David Blaine glass box shower in the middle of your bedroom.
Hanging, suspended.
In the middle of Times Square so everyone can watch. But I think this also is a perfect time for another poll. We said we were going to try to do more of these. So on Instagram and also in the show notes, we will put this in the show notes this time because we heard from some people last time who aren't on Instagram and missed out on that poll about the backwards books. So on Instagram and in the show notes, we'll put a poll about how you feel about the open bathroom concept.
There might be multiples because we might have to distinguish, like, are you cool with the shower being out in the open, just the toilet behind doors, or are you cool with none of it being out in the open?
Okay, but let's move on to where digging. I am digging something this week in a whole new category, something I've never dug before on this podcast. And if that is not enough buildup for you, I'm going to put you in suspense because first we're going to take a quick break. Okay, so some of you may remember that last fall we did an ad for Universal Furniture and it was their dining room event, which means they were doing a giveaway to win $10,000 worth of dining room furniture.
And guess what? One of our listeners won. They won $10,000 to spend on a dining room, which like I freaked out. I freaked out more than they freaked out, I think.
I know. So just think about that. Someone just like you guys listening heard the ad, went and entered, and then bam, had thousands of dollars of new dining room furniture.
I know. And now they're doing it again.
Yep.
This time it's the bedroom, and they're giving away $5,000 worth of bedroom furniture.
So just go to universalfurniture.com/YHL to enter. It's super fast and easy now through March 26th. You can also start browsing and sort of getting an idea of what you might spend your money on. They've got, of course, beds and headboards, but also like nightstands and dressers and armoires and even benches.
Yeah, and we actually used some of their dressers and nightstands in that show house we did way back in 2014. Their stuff is great. We didn't even know it was theirs, and we used it serendipitously. So it's good looking furniture, you guys, and it's going to be free for somebody.
For one person, at least. And even if you don't win, everyone else can get 15% off as part of their big Rise and Shine bedroom event. That starts this Friday, March 16th, and runs through March 26th. Again, all of that is at universalfurniture.com/YHL. Guys, on this podcast, we have dug tools, decor objects, books, TV shows.
Crystals.
Even podcasts. Yes, crystals. I was trying to leave that out. This week, though, I'm digging an article. This was something I saw going around Twitter a few weeks ago, and a couple of you guys sent it to me because people were saying, if you enjoy the Dirty John podcast, which we dug several weeks ago, it's not about me, John. It's about a con artist who also has the name John. I know. There's a few of us. This article tells a very similar story. It is in New York Magazine, and it is entitled The Worst Roommate Ever. And I feel like I can't say a whole lot because I don't want to give away the article. It's not super long. It's a good kind of like 15-minute read. And it's about another con artist who basically weasels his way into being someone's roommate. And he's super nice and agreeable. And then at some point, things just kind of get dark. And he starts kind of like, I don't know, is harassing the right word?
Yeah, it's like, it turns from just like doing bothersome things, like taking light bulbs out of lights, just like annoying
things. Yeah, like antagonizing things.
Exactly.
And basically making it a nightmare to be roommates with him. And the article details all the ways that he has done this for years to several people. And it has a very crazy culmination to the story. I'll just leave it at that.
No, I feel like we can say what happens without fully giving away who. It ends in murder.
Oh, well,
I'm not going to tell you
every good article ends in murder, Sherry.
I'm not going to tell you who or what, but very much like Dirty John, where the entire time you don't know who got murdered or did the murdering.
They do tease that at the very first episode. That is not a spoiler.
Right. Of Dirty John.
Yeah.
Yes. And of this article, you're kind of like, oh, it's just like a bad roommate article. Who cares? But then when you're like, murder.
Yeah. No, it gets it crazy escalates. And dark.
Yes. Yes.
I guess the graphic for the article is a knife into a pillow. So they kind of allude to it. So maybe that wasn't a spoiler. I will put a link to the article, obviously, in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. And again, it was from New York Magazine called Worst Roommate Ever. It came out at the end of February. Some of you may have caught it, but if not, give it the 15 minutes. It's a great read.
Yeah, I wish someone had done a podcast about it because now I know what happened.
Maybe we should do a podcast about it.
And call it Dirty...
Dirty Roommate.
No, what was his name?
Jed.
Jed. Dirty Jed.
It has a ring to it.
It does have a ring to it. Okay, and this week what I'm digging is a little more straightforward and home-related. It's little clocks.
As in things that tell time.
Yes. Little table talk clocks. Table talk. Little table talk clock.
Little TikTok.
That's so hard to say. Little tabletop clocks. And I don't want digital ones. I want the good old-fashioned ones with hands.
Analog.
But I'm particular. I want the ones with hands, but I don't want a second hand. You know why?
Hands, but not too many hands, folks.
I can't stand the tick, 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 tick. I can hear it across the room. It's annoying. It's terrible to do in a guest room. If you guys have a guest room with a clock that has a second hand, throw it out the window. Yes.
We were guilty of this for years. We didn't realize it.
We didn't. And then we slept in there and we were like, oh my gosh, we have been doing this to people. We quickly remedied that. But there are many reasons I like them. One, I like them because our kids are learning how to tell time analog and it's a nice way.
Let's be honest, kid.
Okay.
The 3-year-old is not there.
The 3-year-old pretends he knows, but our older daughter is getting great at it, even tricky ones where the hands overlap or something looks like it's close to being 2, but it's really still in the 1s. So it's great to have her come down to the kitchen. We have a little tabletop clock in the kitchen now. It's pink. It's from Target. It was under $10. And it's great to just like sort of bat it over at her like, hey, what time is it right now? And I like it because instead of looking everywhere for my phone and, you know, turning the phone on and going down that whole rabbit hole, I can just peek at the tabletop clock and tell time like a normal person did many years ago before there were phones.
As someone who's been detoxing from their phone, I'm very proud of you for that.
Yeah, I love it. And I just think they're great for a guest room. They're cute for a bathroom. Anywhere that you just need something functional, because let's face it, a clock is not for beauty. It's for function, right? But it also can be cute. So you don't have to sacrifice one for the other. And again, if they don't have that second hand, they don't have to be annoying. So I'm going to link to the exact one I love from Target. And I thought maybe for extra credit, if I could find some other little ones that were inexpensive, it didn't have a second hand, I could put a little roundup together for you guys in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. But basically, just rethink how many digital things you look at and see if you can bring some charm. You know, there's those old ones that look like a vintage alarm clock. There's just really cute ones out there. McGee & Co. does a cute one. I don't know if it has a second hand. I'll have to check.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to vouch for the secondhand loudness on all these. We'll have to check the reviews.
No, I'm just going to not link if they have a secondhand.
Oh, wow. Cutthroat.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And actually, thanks for listening to the end of Young House Love Has a Podcast. I know you guys could easily jump ship about now in the episode, but we really appreciate you sticking around for these last couple minutes.
I mean, you need the outtake, right?
Well, you've got to know what people are doing while they listen. It's my favorite part.
Yeah, like Declutter DC on Instagram, who listened while taking a bath in a lodge in Zimbabwe.
Whoa, I wonder if it was open concept.
Maybe with like a glass wall and you could see like elephants just roaming by.
That is an open concept bathroom I could get behind.
And you definitely want to hit up this week's show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, info, and photos.
Yeah, like pics of those crazy hotel bathrooms we stayed in. I promise the pictures are G-rated.
And some photos of installing that sink in our half bathroom before I broke the leg.
Later.
Bye. We see each other shower. We don't watch each other poop.
That was a little bit too personal the way that was stated. Well, I mean, I agree with the facts.
Or pee.